This story actually begins at a tree on a curve on Indiana State Road 46 east of Bloomington, where Albert Fink crashed his 2012 BMW sedan. What Fink didn't know is that two Indiana State Police detectives were right behind him that day. ISP Sergeant Kurt Durnell says the detectives encountered a strange situation. Fink told them the crash was deliberate.
Once they realized what had happened, they had a conversation with Mr. Fink.
And what happened?
What was it about? You know, I'd say it was not ordinary, and that his intention was to commit suicide right here on the strip.
Fink had been on his way to testify as an expert witness at the arson and explosives trial of Caleb Loving. Vandenberg County Prosecutor Nick Herman, who was trying that case, says his office got a call from a state trooper who said,
"Hey, you know, this doctor was in an accident, and he says that he falsified a report and he was going to be called as a witness the next day." We quickly realized that that was the trial we were in.
Dr. Fink had filed a report that said Loving was mentally competent to stand trial. The only problem was he'd never met Caleb Loving. Loving's defense attorney, Stephen Owens, says he'd already been suspicious of Fink, who was reluctant to testify about the competency exam he said he performed.
So I talked to him probably three times, and each conversation got a little more odd. I would have described that those conversations as squirrely, I guess is the way I would have described it. After that, I started looking into jail visitation records and discovered that there was no listing of him being there.
85-year-old Albert Fink is a psychologist often hired by the court. He's performed dozens of these evaluations over the last 10 years. The judge declared a mistrial in Caleb Loving's case, but Fink's scene of the crash confession called into question not only the trial he was slated to go to, but everyone he'd ever worked on. Herman says it prompted a massive, months-long investigation.
It was a large effort, and a lot of different agencies participated in and helped with that investigation. It was a troubling case in that you had a person that is literally hired by the court to come in and testify about something that, you know, is lying.
Almost a year to the day after he crashed into the tree, Dr. Fink pleaded guilty to a felony charge of obstructing justice. He received probation and had to surrender his professional licenses. So, Albert Fink was caught and punished. But, according to Owens, here's the scary part.
If Albert Fink had not crashed his car and admitted to the officers that he falsified those mental evaluations, would he have ever been caught?
I'd have to say maybe. And whether it would have been this case or not, I don't know. I'd like to think that somebody, at some point, would have caught up with him. Obviously, we didn't catch up with him all these other cases.
How many other cases? SideFX has obtained a list of cases that turned up during the investigation in which Albert Fink is suspected of possibly falsifying the exams. We'll discuss that in our next segment, as well as why the conviction of Albert Fink has raised serious questions about how courts determine competency in Indiana. For SideFX, I'm Steve Berger. In July of 2015, Caleb Loving, a 27-year-old Evansville man, was charged with lighting fire to his apartment and possession of explosives. Though mentally disabled, he was declared competent to stand trial on the basis of two psychologists' examinations. His defense attorney, Stephen Owens, says that was a mistake.
He was not capable of understanding the significance of Miranda rights and making a knowing waiver of those rights.
On day three of his trial last summer, the judge declared a mistrial. One of the examining psychologists, Dr. Albert Fink, admitted that, in fact, he'd never seen Caleb Loving. After Fink confessed, Loving had two more mental competency exams and spent a few months in a state mental hospital. Ultimately, the judge in the case threw out much of what Loving told police after his arrest.
That whole non-evaluation, mistrial, re-evaluation has cost Caleb a lot of months in jail. His case would have been resolved one way or the other by now.
Loving pleaded guilty to a reduced charge in the case. His sentencing is set for next month. Law enforcement in Vandenberg County suspect Fink may have falsified exams in 28 other cases. The reason he got away with it is a lack of oversight. Lawyers freely admit they don't understand these reports and rarely try, except for high-profile cases.
I don't know that I have enough skill or knowledge, I'm not sure any of us do, to definitively say one way or the other that this person actually got seen or not.
To learn more about Indiana's competency exams, I talked to Dr. George Parker of the Indiana University School of Medicine. He walks me through a typical exam.
What are the charges? How serious are they? What level are they? What could happen to you as a result of these charges?
Parker is a board-certified forensic psychiatrist who researches the intersection of mental health and the legal system.
What happens if somebody is found guilty or not guilty? Who are the typical court participants? And what do they do in court? So what's the judge's job?
In Indiana, he says,
you have to be pretty impaired to be incompetent to stand trial, actively psychotic, or intellectually disabled without very good verbal skills and difficulty learning new material. It takes some work.
While Indiana law says that evaluators must have expertise in determining competency, Parker says that's not always being followed in Indiana courts. There's also no system in place for checking up on the expertise levels of the providers conducting the exams, according to Owens, the chief public defender in Vandenberg County.
The qualifications for some people to do these evaluations are minimal, and that's one of the problems.
Well, it meets the legal standard, though.
I don't think the judges look beyond that. Question is, should they look beyond that? I don't know. I mean,
well, I'm going to ask
somebody
as well.
Should.
Somebody has in the growing number of states adopting certification and review standards for competency examiners. This fix could be made through legislative action or through a voluntary cooperative effort between mental health professionals and the Indiana Judges Association, for example. Dr. Parker says such a move in Indiana could give lawyers and judges an important tool to weed out bad actors like Albert Fink. For Side Effects, I'm Steve Berger. Outside the booking area at the Vandenberg County Jail, a response team of five staff members rushes past to deal with what is becoming a common scenario. A potentially violent, mentally ill inmate, in this case resisting a change of clothing following a court appearance. This time, even though the inmate remains agitated, the situation is resolved without the need for further restraint. The jail staff go back to their other duties. Talking with the staff, the frustration is evident at the increasing number of mentally ill inmates in already overcrowded facilities. For the Indiana counties using the online Odyssey case management system, annual orders for exams to determine legal competency nearly tripled between 2011 and 2016.
Well, the problem is, I think she just started mumbo jumbo crazy talking in the middle.
It is those mentally ill or intellectually challenged criminal defendants for whom Dr. Albert Fink is suspected of falsifying competency exams. Fink pleaded guilty to a felony charge of obstructing justice in August. The 85-year-old psychologist received probation and had to surrender his professional licenses. Psychologist David Serling has performed hundreds of competency exams over the past 25 years. We meet at the jail to see the conditions under which those exams are performed in Vandenberg County.
Good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Did Major Ferguson tell you coming in here?
He leads me to a room next to a staff office. Despite cinder block walls, the setting is pleasant. There's a conference table with padded chairs. A neutral shade of carpeting covers the floor. Few of the jail sounds reach this inner area.
So, as they say in Hamilton, this is the room where it happens. What I do when I begin an interview, I certainly try to clarify on the one hand, you know, that it's not confidential, but then this has been ordered by the court that I'm going to ask them a number of questions
some of them pertaining to their personal history, but then I want to be asking them questions that pertain to the specific charges that they're in jail for.
Indiana law requires two exams of a criminal defendant. While Dr. Serling is not suspected of any wrongdoing, his is the second name on most of the 29 cases for which Albert Fink may have filed false reports in Vandenberg County. Dr. Serling says despite working on many of the same cases, though, he rarely saw or spoke with Dr. Fink.
Well, I would imagine we didn't say more than 30 or 40 words. You know, one of the ideas is that you're providing an independent evaluation, and so you don't really want to be comparing notes a lot, certainly about ongoing evaluations that you're doing.
There is a general sense of incredulity at the brazen nature of Albert Fink's crimes and the fact that no one was aware of them until a bizarre incident when Fink crashed his car into a tree and confessed to police at the scene. But that incredulity is not translating into any significant changes under consideration to monitor exams more closely. For example, pointing out that Albert Fink was caught and punished, Vandenberg County Prosecutor Nick Herman says he's not planning to make any big adjustments in his office. Vandenberg County Sheriff Dave Wedding doesn't think any changes need to be made in jail record-keeping policies either. The county's chief public defender says his office will be more careful checking those jail records and will hire independent experts to review high-profile cases involving competency, but Steve Owens says that's probably where any local changes will stop.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds a little like you're saying nothing's going to change because of what happened with Albert Fink.
Yeah, that may be what I'm saying. I don't see a whole lot changing in the court system.
Albert Fink was convicted of falsifying the evaluation in one case, but we heard from several people during the investigation that there were more suspicious evaluations. Just when we were about to wrap up our investigation into the damage Albert Fink's crimes have done to the Indiana legal system, we obtained the list investigators put together of other suspicious cases, cases that have now reached the attention of Indiana's highest court. We'll talk about that in our next segment. For WNIN News, I'm Steve Berger. Michelle Hirschberger, charged with arson in April of 2014. Catherine Mason, charged with battery on a public safety officer later that same year. Terry Kuhn, charged with being a habitual traffic offender in 2015. What these defendants share is that evaluation reports of their mental competence to stand trial were filed with the court for each of them by Bloomington psychologist Albert Fink. Something else they share is that it is suspected that Fink may have falsified their evaluation reports and those in 25 other cases in Vandenberg County. The 29th case is Caleb Loving, for which Fink was convicted. Many in the legal system in Southwest Indiana thought there was more than just one case of a falsified evaluation, but how many more was the big question. Here's Vandenberg County Prosecutor Nick Herman during an interview shortly after filing charges against Fink in August of last year.
The big issue with the case is the doctor's statement that this has happened multiple times. I do expect that there will be multiple counts filed in the future. At this time, I don't know how many.
Vandenberg Chief Public Defender Steve Owens says they began to notice a pattern as they looked more closely at all of the cases for which Fink provided evaluations.
There were issues with regards to the time lag between that appointment and the issuance of the report that would have caused me, in hindsight, to go back and say, I'm not sure that he actually did the evaluation.
It was too quick?
Yes, it was much too quick.
Can you give me an example?
Three days, 5 days.
Other investigators checked jail visitation records and payments made by the county auditor. The list of suspected cases grew to a jaw-dropping figure. Over 40% of the evaluations Albert Fink performed in Vandenberg County may have been falsified. If Herman suspected several more crimes had been committed, why weren't there more charges filed?
There's a difference between thinking that maybe it happened and actually being able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. There's a large gap between those two.
Another factor may be that Albert Fink is 85 years old and resides in an assisted living facility. Herman says they wanted to make sure that Fink received a felony conviction, which he did, and that his professional licenses were surrendered, which they have been. Both Herman and Owens did comprehensive reviews of all the suspected cases and decided that for various reasons, the outcomes would not have changed regardless of Fink's participation. For Vandenberg County officials, the case is closed. But was justice done in the other 28 cases? Is there a greater question of the defendant's right to fair treatment than simply to say that we don't think the outcome would have changed? During the launch of the public phase of this reporting project on WFYI's No Limits program, former Indiana Chief Justice Randall Shepard discussed that with host John Kroll.
We have an entire system, and one of the biggest law offices in Indiana, the state public defender, is charged with going back and looking for the needles in the haystack, try to find people who, not just on these grounds, but on other grounds, didn't get a fair trial, didn't have an adequate legal protection.
Indiana is one of the few states where incarcerated defendants have an automatic right to what is known as post-conviction relief. Their convictions can be reviewed and overturned if some error occurred in their case. We took the question to the Chief Public Defender of the Indiana Supreme Court, no relation, but who also happens to be named Stephen Owens. He knew about the list and had been keeping an eye out for defendants who might want to file for post-conviction relief. Our call prompted him to take an unusual step of soliciting those defendants whose evaluations may have been falsified by Albert Fink.
Rarely do we ever reach out to individuals, defendants, to let them know that this post-conviction remedy is available. But in this case, talked with Judge Mary Willis from the Supreme Court, and we decided that this could be an occasion where we'd kind of go outside the rules and try to contact the individuals that were affected by this case.
When we began investigating this case over a year ago, one of the first comments I heard from a state-level official was, "This has opened a big can of worms for a lot of people." Our investigation uncovered it's actually a much bigger can of worms than just the trouble Albert Fink caused the legal system. There is another group of potential victims that numbers in the thousands who may also have been affected by his crimes. We'll talk about that in our next series of reports in the coming weeks. For WNIN News, I'm Steve Berger.
It was a troubling case in that you had a person that is literally a witness called by the court that, is lying.
A massive, months-long effort to catch a traitor in the Indiana court system.
This guy's an entrepreneur, isn't he?
Wow.
Led WNIN and Side Effects investigators to a potentially much larger pool of victims.
Do you think that if Albert Fink had not crashed his car and admitted to the officers that he falsified those mental evaluations, would he have ever been caught?
I'd have to say maybe.
When Bloomington, Indiana psychologist Albert Fink admitted he falsified a mental evaluation in a criminal case last year, it set off a cascade of consequences that continues today. While the 85-year-old Fink has been caught and punished, his crime calls into question over 10,000 criminal cases and Social Security disability claims for which he provided evaluations or testing. The sleepy town of Shoals straddles the East Fork of the White River in Martin County, Indiana. It was here, some 80 miles away from Evansville, that word of Albert Fink's arrest reached prosecutor Mike Steiner. Steiner had two cases with ties to Fink. One of them was a high-profile double homicide case against a man named Nathan Baker.
Have you ever come across anything quite like this?
No, I have not. No, I have no frame of reference for this at all.
Generally, in the court system, psychologists, it is a trusted profession, and I think that that actually may make it more likely that somebody could do the things that Dr. Fink's alleged to have done.
Absolutely, and it's just like any other profession. I mean, physicians have their problem physicians, lawyers have their problem lawyers, engineers have their problem engineers, clergy have their problem clergy. It's every profession, because it's a human endeavor, are going to have problems.
Do you have any opinions on what could be changed within the system to keep that from happening?
Not really. And the reason is that at some level, we have to trust people to do that which they are supposed to do.
Another common comment is that in addition to being willing to work for low pay, a big reason that practitioners like Albert Fink get used in the court system is that many psychologists won't work with the courts at any price.
Sometimes with the way we lawyers behave, I can't really say that I blame them too much. I mean, it's clearly an adversarial situation. And I also think that, some of the mental health providers primarily, and not just mental health providers, but medical professionals in general, have a certain distaste or discomfort or fear of the legal system. They don't want to testify. They don't want to be in court. They don't want to be subject to cross-examination for a lot of different reasons.
In general, the defense side of the courtroom seemed a little more shaken by the story of Albert Fink. David Smith is the defense attorney in the Nathan Baker case.
It disturbs me a lot. As concerned as I am about it, the judges are more concerned, because ultimately, as the participants in the system responsible to make sure justice is done and rights are preserved, it's ultimately going to fall on the judge's lap if appeals occur, if irregularities take place in trial proceedings. They end up being the ones held responsible for those things.
Does it disturb you, though, that the evaluations could be looked at if they weren't actually done? They could be looked at it and not get caught?
It's absolutely frightening to me that an evaluation could not be done, but the opinions expressed in those evaluations could have substantive impact on a criminal case, especially a serious one. Absolutely.
How do you think that could even happen?
Well, I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know. I was surprised to hear not just that it occurred, but apparently, as the allegations go, in several cases and over some period of time. That seems hard to envision that no one would ask and that no one would find out sooner.
So there were some warning signs that were missed that allowed Albert Fink to continue gaming the system in Vandenberg County. Does Owens think anything will change?
In our office, we need to be a little more cognizant of things like turnaround times. I think in major cases anymore, I think it's well worth the time to retain an independent expert to review what the court's witnesses are saying, because there's a lot at stake there. It's a subjective determination. The qualifications for some people to do these evaluations are minimal. The fact that they're a psychologist doesn't necessarily mean they're qualified to be doing competency and sanity evaluations. I don't think that is just simply you're a psychologist, I don't think gets it. And that's one of the problems.
It meets the legal standard, though.
It does meet the legal standard, but there's a vast difference between being a child psychologist, for example, and being somebody who does forensic evaluations for competency and sanity. Even though technically I meet the legal standard, I can go out and do that if I want.
Well, that's up to the judge, though, to decide whether that person's competent to, that psychologist is competent.
Well, as you say, it meets the legal standard. I don't think the judges look beyond that. I don't think the judge looks at beyond that. It says disinterested psychiatrist or psychologist. Isn't that what the statute says? And I don't think the judge looks beyond that language of saying they are a psychologist or they're a psychiatrist and they're willing to do them, preferably at a reduced rate. I mean, I think, I really don't think the judges looked beyond that. Now, the question is, should they look beyond that? I don't know. I mean, somebody should.
Steve Owen's comments are direct and disturbing. First, that many in the legal system don't understand a critical piece of evidence well enough to know if it's been falsified. Second, that competency and sanity exams are being performed by professionals who are unqualified or at least underqualified. When we come back, more on that discussion and a possible solution that's receiving positive feedback from an important judicial source. I'm Steve Berger. You're listening to A Scar on the System, a collaboration of WNIN and Side Effects Public Media. Albert Fink was convicted of falsifying a competency exam in one criminal case, but as we've heard already, more were suspected. How many more? The WNIN Side Effects investigation revealed that more than 40% of the evaluations Albert Fink performed in Vandenberg County may have been falsified. Our inquiry prompted action at the highest levels of the Indiana court system. The disturbing comments from Steve Owens and others prompted us to contact the person perhaps best qualified to discuss legal competency in Indiana from a medical perspective. Dr. George Parker is with the Indiana University School of Medicine. In addition to researching competency, he's performed hundreds of competency exams in Indiana and spent more than a decade as the chief medical officer of Indiana's state mental hospitals. I talked with Dr. Parker at his office at the IU Med School in Indianapolis. Dr. Parker's take? As bad as it sounds, Steve Owens is right.
All the attorneys I've interviewed, prosecutors and defense attorneys, have said in some form or another, we are not capable of monitoring those reports and having any idea whether they're falsified or not because we don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect them to be able to. I mean, I think they should know what a good report looks like, and they'll be able to say that, and they'll know what kind of report a particular examiner writes because they see them over time. But they won't know whether report number 23 is fiction when, you know, 21 and 22 were good and were the same format. We all have our own standard formats for our reports. And as long as it fits the format for that particular examiner, folks aren't going to notice that. Even inside the profession, it might be hard to pick that up. Because he said he went and saw the person, and so we don't know what that person's history is. That he's making up that person's history or making up the evaluation, we weren't there. We don't know that person.
So what do you do about that?
I don't know. I mean, it's such a gross breach of the ethical standards that it's like, you know, what's the phrase? It's inconceivable, but obviously it happened. It's just stunning that someone would do that and do it so significantly. I mean, I can sort of construct a slippery slope where you start sort of making up little bits because the interview was going that way and you just need a little more support, so you change a quote or, you know, something like that. But to, like, say that you went and saw somebody when you didn't, and to make up the information that you learned or the testing that you did from that time, words fail me.
Indiana Code
specifically states that the psychologist with expertise in determining competency. That's what the law says.
Well, that's what the statute says, but in reality, it's whether the judges can find someone who can do the evaluation. Now, in Marion County, here in Indianapolis, there are a few choices. The judges have some options, and the folks that do most of them, myself included, have a fair amount of experience doing them. But when you get into the rural counties, well, it's hard to find mental health professionals, period, in the smaller counties and even in the smaller cities. And to find one that's willing to take the time to go to jail and do an evaluation and then work around the court schedule to do a, perhaps testify at a hearing, a lot of folks are not interested in doing that. And it's hard to find folks who are willing to do that. And so it's a matter of who's willing and available to do the evaluations, not so much whether they have expertise. I think it can make a pretty persuasive argument that it'd be good to have some kind of central agency that has oversight on the people who do the evaluations and the quality of the reports that are done with some basic certification process. So if somebody wants to do court-ordered evaluations, there'd be some fairly straightforward way that they could get basic training on, you know, what the standards are, how to do the interviews, how to write the reports, and how to testify effectively. Nothing onerous, but, you know, it would require the investment of a day or online training or something. And then have some kind of a system where the reports that are submitted get sent to some central agency. It could be one or two or three people. Maybe some of them are volunteers. I don't know. That would review them and say, okay, yeah, this guy's doing a good job. Oh, this, they need to work on this section. So there'd be some kind of feedback so you could stay certified. That would be great.
Another person who thinks that some form of voluntary certification should be considered is former Indiana Chief Justice Randall Shepard. After hearing about Dr. Parker's idea while previewing our series, he said he wanted to know more about the concept during an appearance on the No Limits program on WFYI. Almost a year to the day after he crashed his car into the tree, Albert Fink pleaded guilty to one count of obstructing justice, a felony in Indiana. He received probation and had to surrender his license to practice psychology. Throughout several hearings, he remained silent on his case. Just before he went into court to plead guilty, however, we caught up with him outside a restaurant across the street from the Gibson County Courthouse just before his sentencing. He wouldn't let us record it, but when I asked him for a comment, he said, quote, "It doesn't matter. I'm ruined anyway." Nothing anyone can do or say will change that. After his sentencing, Dr. Fink was in a much better mood. We got a quick comment on tape, but from a distance.
Relief and still have some concerns.
All right, thank you, Dr. Fink.
It's a little hard to hear, but what he said was relief and still some concerns. Since that court hearing, I've tried numerous times to contact Albert Fink for an interview. He has not returned my calls. However, I did reach him once and had a 20-minute phone conversation with Dr. Fink after I agreed that his comments would be off the record. I can say that he was fairly upbeat and much more confident now that he knew he wasn't going to prison. But he was very guarded with all of my questions and wouldn't even confirm basic information. We left it with him considering a formal interview.
Albert Fink?
Can't take your call now. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, simply hang up or press the pound key for further options.
Let's take a short break. Within a few days of breaking the news about Albert Fink's confession in the Caleb Loving court trial, we contacted Dr. Bob Wilson of Evansville, who's now deceased, to see if he could help make sense of what was becoming an increasingly bizarre story. Bob, also a psychologist, said he first met Albert Fink when they worked together on what is known as a consultative examination in a Social Security disability case. That evaluation with Bob Wilson was one of 10,567 cases in which Dr. Fink performed exams or testing for Social Security beginning in 2006. Given his conviction in the criminal case, if Albert Fink took shortcuts on his work for SSA, as he did for the courts, people who should be getting aid for physical and mental disabilities may have had their claims wrongly denied based in part on Fink's evaluation. Likewise, people who perhaps shouldn't be getting aid could have been given recommendations intended to avoid scrutiny. Several Freedom of Information Act requests, denials, appeals, and mediation later, we know little about Albert Fink's work for SSA, except the total number of consultative exams he performed in Indiana, for which he was paid over $1.6 million. We broadcast appeals on WNIN for disability claimants and contacted area attorneys who have worked with SSA disability claims. We heard from several claimants. In the processing of her claim for a physical ailment, Gisela Fisher had a consultative mental exam with Fink in 2013. After years of appeals, her disability claim was eventually denied. Ms. Fisher talked with us about her exam.
The way I remember it, there was a mother and her son in the waiting room when I arrived. He explained that he lived in Bloomington and came down like once a week to take appointments in Evansville. And so we were his first appointments for the day. But, you know, I went in and we talked for a while. And he asked me if I was experiencing any issues, psychological issues. You know, he asked me if I heard voices or, you know, saw things, or if I was disturbed by anything, or, you know, I don't remember exactly what questions he asked, but it would be the normal questions that one would expect that a psychologist would ask, I suppose, to find out if you were having psychological issues. And then he mentioned that I spoke German, and he said he did too, and so then we started a little conversation in German, and he asked me if I thought I had any psychological problems, and I told him no, not really. I think I have a pretty normal reaction to poverty, and he kind of let it go at that.
About how long did it last?
I don't think it was much. It's probably between 15-20 minutes. I wasn't uncomfortable in his presence. I thought his demeanor toward me was appropriate. I think I was a little bit surprised by the fact that there was no receptionist or anyone else there working with him. But I didn't really spend much time thinking about it at the time because I was only there for 15 or 20 minutes.
15 to 20 minutes, at least for this claim. We also heard from a local attorney who appealed a denial when it was revealed that the mother of the claimant said that Fink's interview was over before she could finish her cigarette.
Whoa. I don't think I've made that in my whole life. This guy's an entrepreneur, isn't he?
Wow.
We interviewed other psychologists who have done disability claims work. That expression of surprise came when we showed Dr. Michael Pisano of Indianapolis the list of payments made to Dr. Fink that we obtained from the Indiana Auditor's Office. Side Effects public media reporter Jake Harper is the interviewer.
Does $15,000 in 1 month sound high to you?
It does sound very high.
Yeah.
What would
in 1 month, let's say he worked a typical 20 days, that would mean $750 in a day. He could do that if he did 8 evaluations in a day, every day.
Do you know anyone that does that?
Not offhand, no.
When we interviewed Dr. Pisano in December of 2016, he said he had performed about 500 consultative exams for disability claims. To get some perspective on the experience that Gisela Fisher had with Dr. Fink, we asked Dr. Pisano to describe how he conducts the same exam.
I will bring them into my office, ask them to show me a picture ID if they have one, to verify who they are, and then I divide the interview itself into three parts. The first part is what I call a mental status exam, and that's to evaluate specific mental abilities, such as abstract thinking, memory, ability to do mathematical problems, and so on. The second part includes an assessment of their adaptive functioning. How well are they able to negotiate their typical day? So how often do they bathe? What household chores do they do? Can they use a computer? Do they go shopping on their own? Can they handle money? What are their leisure activities? What level of social interaction do they have? And thirdly, I ask them about their history. So that would be their family history, their work history, their personal and psychological history, any previous contacts with the mental health system, and so on. At the end of that, I pull it all together and I try to provide recommendations and also my diagnosis or diagnoses.
How long does that part take, the examination that you do with the patient?
The actual interview takes me between an hour and 1 hour and 15 minutes.
Catherine Nordahl is another psychologist who has done consultative exams in her career.
Maybe on average 4 to 5 hours per claimant. And at 4 to 5 hours, if you, let's say you saw patients 30 hours a week, that could be 6 patients a week, 24 patients a month, and then whatever 24 times 12 is a year, if that's all you did.
24 times 12 is 288 evaluations a year, and that's pretty much what we heard was the top end of what would be considered a substantial annual workload by most psychologists. It was only part of his practice, but Albert Fink still averaged over 3 times that many, over 1,000 cases a year beginning at age 73. With over 2 million applications for disability filed each year in the U.S., you can imagine how expensive it would be if all the people who provided input on those claims were federal employees. So it makes sense from an economic standpoint that the Social Security Administration contracts for those services with the various state and regional disability determination bureaus. It also makes sense if you don't want to have to answer too many questions about whether the system actually works. SSA accepts full responsibility for all disability claims, but contracts the work. In Indiana, a Department of the Family and Social Services Administration hires, monitors, and pays the contractors who do the work, but they claim no responsibility for what happens in that process. As we've noted, Albert Fink was an enthusiastic participant. I'm Steve Berger. You're listening to A Scar on the System, a collaboration of WNIN and SideFX Public Media. When we informed state and federal disability officials of Albert Fink's felony charges in August of 2016, we asked if there would be an investigation of his similar work for SSA. Other than a few brief, unguarded comments at the beginning of our inquiry, the response from state and federal officials about almost any aspect of Social Security's disability claims program has been to either refuse to answer questions or simply ignore them. So we asked contributor Ron Brown to try to get a response about any measure Social Security might take regarding the over 10,000 cases Albert Fink worked on for them in light of his conviction for falsifying a criminal case evaluation.
I've been trying to get an interview with Social Security Administration Regional Communications Director Doug Wynn for several months to ask him about the felony charges filed against Dr. Albert Fink and how the Social Security Administration was handling it. Wynn had stopped responding to emails from WNIN, so we thought a personal visit would work better. I'm standing outside the Harold Washington Social Security Center at 600 West Madison Street. It's easily recognizable by the 100-foot-tall steel baseball bat in front of the building. Doug Wynn has an office on the 10th floor. This will be my third time coming in to ask for an interview with Doug Wynn. We'll see how it goes. There's security at the front desk.
Hi,
sir. How are you doing? Hi, doing fine.
Social Security?
Yes, for Doug Wynn.
You're in the right building. You're coming in?
I'd like to speak with Doug Wynn.
Okay. You are?
Ron Brown, W.
He's expecting you?
I think so. I mean, I don't have an appointment, but I've asked him a couple of times for a quick interview.
Oh!
WNIN.
I know.
At this point, the security guard is looking up the phone number for the regional communications director and giving him a call.
Hey, Doug. What's your name?
Ron Brown. Ron Brown.
I've got a Ron Brown down here. Okay. What would you like me to inform him back or? No problem. Sure. He said he's in a meeting right now. Whatever you guys are working on, he'll get back to you.
All right. Thank you very much. Finally, on December 4th, Doug Wynn, Regional Communications Director for the Social Security Administration's Chicago region, did send a reply. He said that he contacted the Office of Inspector General to help get answers for our questions. Among other things, he wrote that the Fink criminal case doesn't concern or involve the Social Security Administration because it's a state issue only. Consultative examiners like Fink are licensed in the state and don't make determinations on disability claims for the Social Security Administration, he wrote. Those determinations are made by trained medical staff who make sound decisions according to the rules and regulations for determining Social Security claims. But what if they're getting bad information? The question about whether the Social Security Administration is concerned about the quality and accuracy of information in the thousands and thousands of Fink examinations simply was not answered. I'm Ron Brown for WNIN.
So, our reporting did prompt Doug Wynn to notify the Office of the Inspector General about Fink's felony charges. The OIG, by the way, will not confirm whether an investigation is underway or has ever been started. But SSA still won't acknowledge whether they intend to do what the criminal justice system in Indiana has done. That is, to look into the cases Albert Fink provided services for and contact the claimants who may have been affected so they can take appropriate steps if any are needed. What about the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration? Their response has been repeated denials of any responsibility, always referring to the fact that Social Security is responsible, even when we ask about hiring, monitoring, and paying the vendors, which a department of FSSA clearly does for this service. We asked Indiana Auditor Tara Klutz to clarify the relationship the state has with all vendors.
When an agency authorizes payments, what are they attesting to?
When an agency authorizes a payment, they are basically validating that they've received the services on the invoice or received the items, and then they're sending it to the auditor's office, and then we validate that they have the money in the budget to pay it, that the invoice matches the amount that they've entered in the system and they're not duplicating the payment, and then we will process it.
Are you aware of any situation in Indiana state government where a state agency is responsible for paying a vendor, but they're not responsible for what that vendor does?
No. In fact, I would have a hard time with that, because if I'm going to be responsible for paying a vendor, I would want to have some assurance that the vendor was providing the services that we were paying them for. Oftentimes when we're dealing with confidential information, whether that be with the inmates at DOC or FSSA, for health reasons, they won't send data over. They'll keep it at the agency, and then if anybody needs access or has questions about it, they just go to the agency directly.
Okay.
As we noted, FSSA's response has been to repeatedly deny any responsibility and refuse our requests for an interview. That is until we presented them with the answer the SSA's Doug Wynn finally gave to our question about who's responsible for monitoring the work of vendors like Albert Fink. That response read, in part, "Each state agency is responsible for comprehensive oversight management of its CE program. The states are responsible for monitoring CE providers and resolving service issues." In other words, how Indiana Auditor Tara Klutz confirmed all state agency business is conducted. Whatever work Albert Fink did or didn't do on those 10,567 disability claims cases, the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration paid him and is responsible for the quality of those exams. As of this broadcast, the agency is reconsidering our request for an interview. Albert Fink has not been accused or convicted of any wrongdoing in his practice involving Social Security disability claims. His age and felony conviction in the criminal case make it unlikely that any more charges would be filed, regardless of the outcome of an investigation. Our goal in this project was to show the impact of Albert Fink's crime on the criminal justice system in Indiana and on the system of handling Social Security disability claims. It seems while justice is working in the criminal courts in Indiana, justice for the Indiana residents named on the over 10,000 reports filed for disability claims by Albert Fink remains to be seen.